Thanks very much, Ken. I'll try to get us back on track. Talk for another 20 minutes. I know that I'm the last of the warm-up acts too before lunch, and I know we're all waiting to hear what Andrew Forrest has to say. So in terms of cutting to the chase, I think picking up from where Eric left off, maybe the solution to the ongoing problem of what infrastructure goes where is to create a new capital of the Pilbara, which might look something like this. So I'll try to keep a level of humour running through this presentation. But back to the topic of my presentation today. The talk this morning has centred around FIFO as a response to market conditions, be that a lack of suitable accommodation, a lack of amenity in key areas, and a lack of availability of a local workforce, which means you have to therefore use the workforce from somewhere else. But I think to a considerable extent, the outcomes that we see today in the Pilbara are in many ways self-fulfilling. If we retain low levels of amenity, if we have low levels of housing and community infrastructure, then it's not all that surprising that we can look forward to more of what we see today, which is an escalating rate of FIFO. So if it lifts to 17,000, if we do nothing, then I think that's an inevitable outcome. Years ago, when the towns in the Pilbara were first established, housing conditions in the Pilbara were better than those in Perth. And that's what attracted people and families to the Pilbara in the first place. But then conditions in the metro region in terms of housing quality and diversity improved substantially. But if you went to the Pilbara, nothing had changed. That housing stock was the same, and in effect, they'd gone backwards. Sue and Nicole have already talked about the impacts of FIFO and resource sector growth on the Pilbara region, and it's fair to say there are circumstances where FIFO is quite an acceptable approach. For example, where you have remote short-term projects or during the major project construction phases where you have a large number of workers but only for a short period. So I don't think anyone's suggesting we should be building permanent accommodation in those situations. But I think in general, FIFO for permanent workforces is not preferred for social and economic reasons, and importantly, if we go back to that idea of sustainable communities. Taking a longer-term view, the problems that cause us to go down the FIFO road, be it lack of amenity and accommodation, we can fix those. And if we fix them well, then I think what we'd see is a workforce that's more willing to relocate on a permanent basis to those enhanced centres in the Pilbara. And that's really the challenge. There are a couple of aspects of FIFO which haven't really been explored or talked about yet, which I'd like to briefly touch on and leave you to think about. And while I'm not here as an advocate of FIFO, far from it, the establishment of FIFO, not only from capital cities but from major regional centres, is in fact helping support the growth of a number of those regional centres. FIFO operates from Geraldton and Busselton, in the near future from Exmouth. So if you go to those places, they think FIFO is not a bad thing. It's in fact promoting regional development, just regional development in a different place from where the employment is. Talking to the Shire of York recently, they think the population growth in their area can be at least partly attributed to the impact of FIFO. The fact that from York to Perth Airport, it's about the same as Mandurah to Perth Airport. So they see that as somewhat of a competitive advantage that can see their part of regional WA grow off the back of the resource sector growth. And while not the primary driver of FIFO, the federal company tax regime does encourage FIFO over permanent employer-provided housing through the tax deductibility and fringe benefits tax arrangements. So that's an area where I know previous governments have tried and failed, but arguably state government and industry should be actively engaging with the federal government to get that rule book changed, because we can talk about land and accommodation, social amenity as long as we like. If some of those more structural arrangements such as the tax system aren't lined up, then it's unlikely we're going to get to an optimised outcome. But getting back to land, housing and accommodation, it's fair to say there have been a lot of issues in recent years. Forecasting land needs has been incredibly difficult, particularly when the resource companies themselves somewhat wax and wane in terms of what their demands are going to be, and they are very reluctant to advise government or Land Corp of what their needs are because of concerns relating to commercial confidentiality. So they'll let us know when they let the stock exchange know. And what that means is that lots are then required in a very short time frame, which makes it extremely challenging, if not impossible, to deliver on. And there have been quite a few occasions when this inability to supply land and accommodation in those short timeframes has been used as a rationale for why we have to go to FIFO. But one could be excused for, on occasion, wondering whether that wasn't in fact the intention all along, for economic or other reasons, as opposed to long-term social sustainability reasons. The initial accommodation problem in the Pilbara was perceived to relate primarily to inadequate land supply, and that meant that the team at Landcorp was focused very much on delivering blocks as fast as we could, and bearing in mind that the land development process is very complex, it's easy to think there's plenty of land in the Pilbara, plenty of earth-moving equipment, you just move it in, create the lots, and up go the houses. Life isn't quite that simple. It takes on average 3 years from when someone says that we need to have some land supply to when that land supply can be delivered. We have quite a complex regulatory arrangement, working through native title, Aboriginal heritage, state and local planning approval processes, state and federal environmental approval processes. The list goes on, and I think you can start to see why, given that a lot of those things can't be run concurrently, they have to be run seriatim, why we're only now starting to make somewhat of a dent in that demand. So 2.5 years, 750 lots and 70 million of development expenditure later. We have got quite a few runs on the board. There's another 600 lots, which is land for 900 homes, to be delivered this financial year. So land supply is very much now, the tap's been turned on. When it first became apparent that growth in the Pilbara was going to be above everyone's projections, and that's including the resource sector, no one saw it coming. The resource companies, in fact, were often selling off some of their homes at what are today incredibly low prices. We set to work really fast-tracking all the land that was already zoned appropriately in Karratha, Port Hedland and Newman. The problem was very little of that land existed, so we had to go through that three-year process. The main approach we've taken to affordability to date, and you might say, well, that's been a total failure when you look at the rental rates and house prices, but the main approach has been to get land on the market, get as much on the market as quickly as possible. We've had very large releases of land when we've had developments happening. We've balloted the blocks rather than auctioning. We've given preference to the locals, and we've put 30-month build requirements on so that we don't want anyone sitting on land and speculating. We don't want the eastern states investors coming in. But what we have created is an army of local investors. But given that they have to build within 30 months, whether they're building for their own purposes or for rental, it doesn't matter because they are addressing that accommodation shortage. We're also now providing a mix of lot sizes. So before it was fairly standard, now we're giving a bit of diversity, multi-residential sites, rental-only sites, and we're starting to work with the not-for-profit housing provider sector because not everyone is on the sort of the turbocharged resources incomes in these towns. So you need to address the needs of the total community. The problem of a lack of land, though, then morphed into one of a lack of builder capacity to build on the new lots. Major metropolitan home builders had their own boom happening in the metro region. They didn't need to go to the Pilbara, and they were very reluctant to go to the Pilbara if it meant that their workforce was going to be poached by the resources sector. So I think, you know, it's fairly straightforward. Why would you go there? So then Landcorp became somewhat of a facilitator of building the building capacity in the Pilbara. So we ran national EOI processes, trying to bring in eastern states builders, trying to bring in new products, transportables, anything that could start to address that accommodation shortage. We then found, though, that the builders who we were able to attract in didn't have anywhere to house their workforce. So we then went and negotiated with Woodside and other providers to get some beds allocated in their construction camps. So it's been somewhat of an iterative process. No one's seen all this stuff coming. No one's been able to foresee the problems and deal with them in a proactive way. It has been quite an emergent approach. We're now in the process of building a display village in Karratha and working with builders to demonstrate that there are different ways of doing things. You don't need double brick. If you go up to Karratha, a lot of it's custom orb. There are a lot of transportable products now on the market. There's a huge number of builders coming into that part of the market, and the trucking companies are doing very, very well. We're also recognising that while the state government has a strong leadership role in this area, and the royalties for regions policy will if anything, accelerate that, there'll be more funding coming in, it's also up to the private sector. A little bit about Brendan Grylls, leader of the Nationals, architect of the Royalties for Regions scheme, and a passionate advocate for more and much better regional development. I think most of us who live in the metro area probably applaud that. We recognise that the regions do have substantial needs and that there is a need for a reasonable level of funding priority. Brendan Grylls is now also the Land Court Minister, so we've got a special affection for those sort of approaches. Having spent time recently in the Pilbara with the Minister, it's clear he has a different vision for the area. It's not about FIFO. Very enthusiastic, but at the same time acknowledges that there are real challenges. He's got a somewhat build it and they'll come approach, that if maybe look at it in reverse. If you don't build it, they definitely won't come. Whereas if you put in place high quality infrastructure, then at least you're in the race to attract families who want to live permanently in that part of the world. So that focus on creating permanent communities, more livable communities to break the current cycle of short-termism is really where we're focused at the moment. And it's all about lifting the experience and lifting the amenity. We need to make our centres in the northwest more livable. We also need to address very much the Indigenous employment and development issues. And I know we're all looking forward to hearing what Andrew Forrest has to say in that regard at lunchtime. At Landcorp, it's easy really generating lots and sometimes easy trying to get builders in. It's very, very hard creating viable communities. So we see that as our biggest challenge. And those communities have to be communities, and as Brendan Grylls says, not only where people are happy to live for a while, but where they want their children to grow up and where ultimately they'd see themselves being buried, which is an odd way of thinking about it, but I think very few people think of being buried in Karratha or Port Hedland or Newman unless you're part of the Indigenous population. And you could say that's really a measure of when we've really developed truly sustainable communities. But that, as I keep saying, requires a lot of investment in good quality social infrastructure. It costs a lot of money. It's all about priorities. And it's all about a joint approach between industry and government. And when you think of each of the towns in the northwest, they all have a unique history of development. Many of them grew out of booms in the past. So whether it was the mining sector, the pastoral industry, pearling industry, a lot of them are boom-fed. And that sporadic boom approach means that often they're poorly planned. They don't anticipate or deal with a lot of the problems that we have today. And as you've already heard from Eric, quite often they have a reliance on one or two industries. And when those industries, commodity prices or whatever, drop, they really fall off the radar. And that's what we've seen. We've seen these towns develop 40 years ago, fall off the radar for the next 30 years, and now they're back on the radar, but they're in somewhat of a time warp. They still look much the way they did 40 years ago. South Hedland, when it was developed, was at the forefront of planning. It was developed in response to the first iron ore boom. There was a lack of suitable land around Port Hedland because of storm surge, etc., drainage, and so South Hedland was chosen some, I think it's 15 or 18 k's, away from Port Hedland itself. And to create an engaged community, a new approach to planning was adopted for South Hedland. Homes were designed to face away from the street, and instead they faced a series of walkways with footpaths and cycleways designed so that you could move around the town without having to worry about crossing roads. Which is a great concept, but not suited, unfortunately, to the Pilbara climate, where even today people jump in their cars to go 200 metres down the road. So that concept was effectively abandoned. We still see the vestiges of it, but it led to major disconnects in the town and calls for urgent revitalisation. And the renewal or regeneration revitalisation that's required in South Hedland, which hopefully will be getting underway soon with government support, is also desperately in need in Port Hedland and also in Karratha. And if you go to Newman, the Newman Council similarly talk about the lack of permeability and walkability of that town, and they too have an expectation of some level of town centre redevelopment. Down the road in Karratha, there's more room to grow, but the topography dictates that it's in somewhat of a linear fashion, which means there's going to be an increased dependence on cars. Unless, of course, we can think a bit more laterally, and maybe we put a light rail system down Dampier Road. And while that again might seem a little bit whimsical, if we don't think about those sort of solutions that applied in a lot of the goldfields towns in the 18th and 19th centuries, then we're really not being serious about thinking about what these places should be like in the future. So what can be done to improve the towns? We've seen the DPI of Pilbara framework. You've already had it explained through Eric Lumsden. That sets out somewhat a roadmap of what infrastructure goes where, what services, what facilities, in which location. And I think this more strategic approach is something that I think we've all been wanting for a long time. It'll get away from a lot of the silos that operate within government and also between government and industry. And we can think about amenity in a more comprehensive way, engaging industry and government in that discussion, and trying to resolve some of the issues about education, childcare, health facilities, cultural facilities, all of that complement of infrastructure that's needed for a healthy community. According to the town of Port Hedland, 43% of residents there don't expect to be there in 3 years, which is a bit of an indictment. If that were the metro area, we'd be having crisis summits organised every day of the week, but we seem to accept it for a place like Port Hedland. 43% leaving. What sort of fabric and community infrastructure and competency capacity can you have if half the town walk out every 3 or 4 years? And a lot of that's due to the fact that there aren't educational choices. People's kids get to primary school age and that's fine. They get to high school age and everyone walks. So that indicates there's a need to address clearly the education facilities in that part of the world. But again, some have tried and failed. We still haven't fixed the problem. And it's only, I think, through government and industry working together that we are going to get the fix. The finances are fairly horrendous, but the turnover costs to the mining companies of having all those people walk every few years are equally horrendous. So there's got to be a win-win somewhere in there. And I don't think it's a matter of the state abrogating its responsibilities. It's a matter of a partnership approach and shared leadership. And, of course, developers need to do more. As I said, we need to do more than just develop land. We've got to provide better urban spaces so that people enjoy being in these towns and don't see it as somewhat of a sentence while they build up their bank account. At LandCorp, we've had very much a focus on getting land out the door. We haven't had time to attend to a lot of the social infrastructure, and we're coming back now to deal with that. We're looking at town centre regeneration. We're looking at how do we work with councils and with industry to put in place some of those missing bits. And when that's done, these towns are going to be far more favourably seen by a workforce which, probably unfortunately, might not have the education, the employment choices in the future that we've had in the last few years. So maybe these towns will be in the race to attract and retain people for longer. Good quality open space is key to that as well. So we can talk health facilities, education, but you need good quality open space. You need good parks, barbecues, places where people can gather. These towns also have shrinking lot sizes. So it's not the big backyards that you might associate with the broad open spaces. Density is coming in. Not everyone wants a big or a standard residential block. They might want higher density. They might want apartments. Why can't they have it? So we're looking at providing that sort of opportunity in these towns. So it's much more than just providing infrastructure. We've got to build that community capacity. We need to work more closely with council, community, industry. Town centre revitalisation and suburb regeneration is going to be much more about of what LandCorp's about. While we keep going, getting the land out the door at the same time, we don't believe this economic downturn is any more than a temporary speed hump in the fantastic WA resources story. And while you can look at the share market indices on a daily basis and get the wobbles, I think all of us have a level of faith in Western Australia, our proximity to this emerging super powerhouse part of the world. It means that if we don't take advantage of this opportunity in terms of our resources capacity, then we don't deserve to be here. Part of the problem, though, is predicting where's that population going to be, how big is it going to be, Will Karratha grow faster? Now, some of that we just need to make the decisions and make it happen, rather than think this thing's going to just happen organically. What role will the Browse Basin development have? Will it see expansion of the Burrup and Karratha? All of those are unknowns, and therefore we need to have a level of contingency planning. But trying to guess or estimate population is very difficult. We've seen various population projections this morning. The ABS say regional WA could grow between 20 and 45%, up to about 800,000 by 2026. A big variability. There's a couple of 100,000 difference in the ABS numbers in terms of their forecasts. Town of Port Hedland says that they expect to have a permanent population of 30,000 by 2015, again at odds with some of the numbers that you've seen on the screen, and they're planning for up to 50. So they're planning on Port Hedland being a city, not some remote mining town, but a northern city. And for the Pilbara as a whole, the PIC figures indicate around 50,000 by 2015, but that includes FIFO as well as permanent. So the whole population forecasting is quite a confusing picture and somewhat speculative. What we've been doing is taking a very cautionary approach. We're planning about 5,000 lots across the whole of the northwest at the moment and working with DPI to make sure that we've got a way to deal with any emergent hotspots. And I think, Eric, you mentioned the hotspots information is now on your website, the WAPC website, so I'd encourage people to have a look at that, and if you don't think it's right, let WAPC, DPI know so that we can all be operating off a better base. The future planning that's required won't really put up with three-year approval timeframes, I don't think, and there's already a major exercise underway to look at how do we skinny down that three-year approval process, how do we get it back to at least, you know, something maybe 12 or 18 months. From a developer point of view, that's music to our ears, but we need to make sure in doing that we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. But if we don't do it, we won't be able to respond to this sort of magic time in the state's economic history. Just before, they're not usually fly in, fly out. They're not enjoying the huge salaries and wages from the resource companies. They're low to middle income earners who work in shops, childcare, hospitality, tourism. They struggle to afford market rentals. They have no option in terms of acquiring land or houses in these towns. They don't qualify for state housing support. And quite often what they do is they leave. And then everyone who's left complains about the further erosion of amenity, which then acts as a further imperative for why people leave the place sooner rather than later. So if we can address that service worker accommodation issue, that might go part way to addressing some of the other issues. And again, our minister has said this is a major priority for him. And with Infrastructure Australia, Pilbara accommodation is one of the four top priorities in terms of the bids that the state government has put into the federal government. But we're not waiting for that. We're going to be running an EOI process looking at how do we get up to 1,000 units of housing in the Pilbara in the next 18 months. And that's not running an EOI in the next 18 months. It's how do we start making major inroads into that need for 1,000 houses for service workers and have them on the ground in 18 months. So I think you'd acknowledge that's fairly challenging. We've already committed 50 lots in our next release at Bainton West in Karratha to small business. And next week, we're trying to get more and better information out of the Karratha Chamber of Commerce to try to get a feel for what are their members experiencing, what do they need for themselves, for their employees, and that'll inform how we deal with that expression of interest. So the solution, though, won't be just about the government through Land Corp coming in and solving the problem. It's going to be much more complex. The private sector will have to have a key role. Likely the not-for-profit housing provider sector will similarly have a key role. And we'll need to be looking at different products. So don't go thinking standard 3x2s. They might be a little bit temporary looking, but they'll be look a little bit permanent as well. So they might be a new hybrid sort of housing product that we're trying to find. Moving on, there's a fair bit of conjecture about the future of our plans for the Perth waterfront. We're still trying to see what the government wants to do with this. Maybe we should be thinking about shifting it and putting it up in the northwest. And while we can joke about this, we think about high-quality waterfront developments in the metro area and in the state's southwest. Land Corp's undertaken developments, Exmouth, Geraldton, Bunbury, Mandurah, but we don't have anything in the northwest. There are plans Well, there's a development underway in Albany, and there'll be another stage of waterfront development in Bunbury in coming years. But what about Karratha? What about Port Hedland? Why don't they have waterfront developments? People talk about the boating experience, the fishing, but there isn't any real decent waterfront experience, even though they're on the coast. So you say, well, that's a missing link, another bit of amenity, another bit of infrastructure that should be put in as part of that overall puzzle. So in wrapping up, I believe that all of us need to think very seriously about what future is that we want for the Pilbara. Are we happy 20 or 30 years out to say, well, what we see today is effectively what we're going to see then? If not, what do we do about it? What's going to be the role of FIFO? Is it something we want to encourage or actively discourage by investing in the region in recognition of what's coming out of that region? We all need to step up. We all need to provide leadership. It's not going to be one group or the other that does that. Essentially, the future is in our hands. And as someone relatively newly famous said, yes, we can. Thank you.